Welcome. My name is Asam Stolu. I'm a trainee editor of the UEG Journal, and you're listening to the UEG Journal podcast. Each episode will highlight one of the most relevant articles recently published in the journal, with the purpose of learning from the most recent evidence and to provide a platform for authors to discuss the most important findings of their research.
Hello and welcome to the UEG Journal podcast. I am Tarek Kani and I am a trainee editor of UEG Journal. Today, Dr. Gabriele Dragoni from Italy will be with us to talk about their article. He is the first author of the article entitled Comparison of Two Strategies for the Management of Postherpetal Recurrence in Crohn's Disease Patients with One Clinical Risk Factor, a multicenter IGIBD study, which was published on April 2023 in UEG Journal. So, dear Dr. Dragoni, welcome to the UEG Journal podcast again, and I'm really happy to have you in here with me today. Thank you very much for joining us. Please introduce us yourself, your position, institute. Also, could you please tell us some about the co-authors of the article?
Okay. First of all, hello everyone. So it's a real pleasure for me to be here in this podcast. I'm Dr. Gabriele Dragoni from the University Hospital of Florence in Italy. I work as an attending physician there. I have a permanent job in the staff of the gastroenterology research unit in my hospital. And as you can see from the article, many of my co-authors are not from my hospital because this is a multicenter IGBD group study. The IGBD group is the Italian group for the study of the inflammatory bowel disease. So our society endorsed this study for us.
Thank you. Management the postoperative treatment in Crohn's disease is sometimes challenging. What was the triggering idea which made you work on this topic and what was your starting point?
So of course you read a lot and you realize there is a research gap in the knowledge of postoperative recurrence of Crohn's disease. There are many data out there, but mostly they are conflicting data, no? And if you look at your patients, most of the times they come to you after a surgery that they think is curative surgery because they just removed a piece that was inflamed. And at that moment, they do not have residual disease activity. So it's sometimes difficult for them and they're quite reluctant to start again a new treatment. No, they ask you, why should I start again immunosuppression? So I think this was the starting point for our study because you have patients that have many clinical risk factors that where you should really recommend for immunoprophylaxis. But in some of them, you have the feeling that having only one or two risk factors and waiting for endoscopy is not that a big deal in the end.
So it means do you feel more confident now?
Yeah, a bit more. Indeed, it is a retrospective study. You need prospective data, maybe clinical trial to confirm that. But I think it's a good starting point.
I agree with you about the prospective data. Actually, my next question is about that. There are some issues in retrospective studies, and data collection is one of them, even it's a multicenter one. What would increase the reliability of the collected data in a multicenter retrospective study, and how did you organize the data collection phase in your work?
Well, first of all, I think the more data you have, the more patients you can collect. Maybe also the more reliable your results will be. No, of course you have the problem of sample size. You want your statistics to be powered, so you want a lot of patients. So the more centers you can involve, the better the study will be, and the more impactful it would be. And I think that it is okay to have multi-center studies, but if you look at too many countries in the same study, they have maybe different regulations, different possibility to prescribe medications. So it is not always so homogeneous to include patients from so many countries. So sometimes having multi-center but national studies, let's say, could be the best in this way. And the second question was about the collection phase, right?
Yes.
We used a registry. We were quite lucky because we had a service that was able to provide us this service. They created a registry for us. They asked me how I wanted to do it. this is not the case anymore, because then we had some problems with AGBD with this service. So now we are using, I think, as most of the people, REDCap platform. So not only for AGBD, and also in my current research practice, I use REDCap, and I think it's very useful and also quite safe. No.
Thank you. Gabriel, as you know, clinical guideline recommendations are developing with accumulation of cumulative knowledge in years. You have also stated the situation in postoperative management in current guidelines. So, do you think postoperative prophylaxis management need to be changed in the future by the contribution of your study?
No, of course we need many more studies. Hopefully prospective studies. Of course, as you know all the limitations that retrospective studies have in general. And of course, you need larger studies also. And I think it's a difficult process. But if you put all data together from different, even small cohorts, you see that patients with 2, 3 or more risk factors are the ones that really need immunoprophylactic treatments. There is also another beautiful study from the Netherlands, from the group of Amsterdam as the leader. And they said that probably 3 or more factors are really the most important there. So we need, I think, to focus on which the patients are with low risk probability of having recurrence. Okay, the high risk patients, but maybe there is room for another category of intermediate risk patients. So we need to probably decide with the patients in this case if we want to wait or if you want to start.
What was your role in this multicenter study, and how did this experience contribute to your career pathway?
I think it's a tough process, if I have to be honest. I designed the project. I had the idea together with the corresponding last author, Jonathan Fiorino, from the San Raffaele Hospital of Milan. But I think you have to trust the process. You need some time. You need months most of the times, because we had the first idea. We wanted to involve actually Leuven in Belgium, because they have a different approach. When I was there, they usually wait for the endoscopy. Okay, if you have 1 risk factor, 2 risk factor, they don't care. They normally wait for the first endoscopic evaluation before starting immunosuppression. So they normally, or at least when I was there, they were not actually that prone to do immunoprophylactic treatment. Whereas, for example, in Milan, Jonathan was telling me, like, we do immunoprophylaxis in all patients. So they already had this different approach regardless of risk factors. And we wanted to focus even in this particular group of patients. We sent out our protocol to the EGBD scientific committee. So that was the first step. We had an internal review from the scientific committee, and then we were able to send out the call to the other interested centers in Italy. But this takes some time, you know. Particularly the ethical committee approval in Italy is a bit tough. So you need also 6 to 8 weeks at least, also just for that. And, you know, step by step, you try to chase the centers that are not really that fast and including patients, but you know that you'll need those centers because you want numbers. Being the chief investigator or the one leading the project is not always easy, you know? And I think you cannot do more than probably 2-3 projects at the same time. I think it's already a lot.
Really inspiring. Congratulations. And please first summarize your findings, and then which areas do you think need to be focused for further research about your study topic? I mean, yes, we agreed on a need of prospective data, but what could be the other topics that need to be focused in near future?
Okay, so in our study, we basically focused, as we said before, on patients with only 1 clinical risk factor for recurrence. So in the end, probably we didn't end up with a very high number of patients, but I think because they were very selected. No, it's difficult to find 1 patient with only clinical risk factor. Maybe they have other no risk factors or 2 or multiple risk factors. So we focused on 1 clinical risk factor, so patients with either fistulizing disease or history of perianal disease, that were smoking, they had a previous resection in the past. So we wanted to see, based on the physician perspective that already chose in the past what to do with those patients, so either waiting for endoscopy or treating immediately with immunosuppression, what would the outcomes be in the short and long term. So for the endoscopic recurrence, so for the first endoscopic evaluation that was the mandatory to be performed between 6 and 12 months, we saw no particular difference, no statistical difference between the two approaches. And this was also the same for clinical recurrence rates at 6, 12, and 24 months. Unfortunately, we have very low numbers with regard to long-term outcomes. So we were able to analyze some patients regarding late endoscopic recurrence after a median of a couple of years. Also there, we did not find a statistical significant difference. I think we needed probably some more data about resurgery rates and hospitalizations and probably complications to say that this approach is the best in the long term. No, I mean, not this approach of waiting for endoscopy, but this is not inferior to prophylactic treatment, no? Because of course, you know, for example, in the short term that you can wait probably for endoscopy, but what about 3, 5, 10 years? Is it okay to wait? Would you want to start immediately? So that is certainly a research gap in our work. And if you say like for what I should see, what I see for the future of our field, let's say, of postoperative recurrence, of course, we only check patients with one risk factor. As I told you before, probably we need more data to stratify our patients. Because, for example, you can have even two risk factors, but I don't know, probably smoking is more important than perianal disease. So having, for example, a previous rejection and a history of perianal disease is not as impactful as being a smoker, no? Even if it's just one risk factor. So I think we have to weigh these factors and see if one is more important than another. And we have an active trial ongoing. So it's again, Belgium plus Italy. It's the Soprano City study. It's a study that is checking whether the immunoprophylaxis or the endoscopic-driven approach are similar, or there's one that is better than the other. This is not focusing on one clinical risk factor only, but I think you can, we will able to stratify and to do a subgroup analysis for this group of patients as well.
It was a good spoiler, so it means that we are looking forward to a new study from you.
yeah. Hopefully,
thank you very much.
It's a very long study, yeah? So 3 to 5 years, but yeah. Hopefully.
Thank you so much, Gabriel. I really enjoyed a lot in this interview with you, and it was a great pleasure for me. Now, we are slowly coming to the end. So at last, do you want to say anything to our listeners?
No, not particularly. I just want to thank everyone for joining and listening to this podcast. So it was really a great pleasure for me, Tariq, and also publishing with the UAG Journal. It was really smooth, and the procedure was really, really great for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you very much.
I have some good news. If you enjoyed this UAG Journal podcast episode, you are in for a treat. Coming this June, UAG is launching a brand new multidisciplinary podcast series called UAG Talks. Listen for fresh insights and perspectives in science, education, and professional development. Please head to ug.eu/podcast to learn more.
We hope you enjoyed this interview. And if you haven't already, please make sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your episodes from. Thank you, and see you again.